Hey everyone, I'm Brooke.
And I'm Adria.
And this is What Have You Done? So it's been an obnoxiously long time since we've done this.
Sorry.
But summer has started and we've been super fucking busy.
Yeah. For someone that claims to have no life, I'm busy almost every day.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you have 4 children and that's enough to keep you busy. And a dog and a cat that have both been to the vet a ridiculous amount of time lately.
I feel like I'm there weekly at this point.
I think you are.
Yeah. I'm sure they love it.
Right. That's probably, you get in the car and that's probably where they think they're going.
Oh, the dog's going to be pissed today.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, you have an appointment for her.
Yeah. Just to.
For Mosby.
So everyone knows, my pup, Mosby, has like a little tumor on her leg that came back having some cancer cells. So she has to get that assessed today and figure out when we're going to take it out. But thankfully, it's not like a spreader. Like, that makes me feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully, they'll just be able to get it all out and it won't be a worry anymore.
Right.
Because she's still young.
She's young 10.
Enough. I know, but that's like, she doesn't act it at all. You know, it's not like she's crotchety already or anything.
You know, she's just a bitch.
Yeah.
Well, but not in like an old way.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, she still does act really young, so I think she'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'm not extremely worried about it, but it was a little worrisome how big it got as quickly as it did.
Yeah.
You know, from one month to another.
They said, though, that it spreads locally fast, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's aggressive in that spot, but not, it doesn't tend to travel.
That's good.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Right.
What's going on with you?
Not too much. I just looked up the last time we uploaded an episode and it was May 19th, so.
Oh my god.
Like a month and a half ago. I don't even know what I've done since then.
Let's see.
A couple Pride events.
Yep.
That was fun. Met up with some awesome people. Stayed with awesome people. It was a really good time. I had a blast.
Yeah, Providence looked like it was fun.
That was so much fun. I saw Halsey in between then.
Oh, that's right.
That was fun.
I love Halsey.
Been doing kickball like it's nobody's business. I just signed up for the summer league.
Whoa.
Again, we got so many people to do it. It's honestly awesome.
Is that still on Wednesdays?
Yep.
That's fun.
Yep. I went to a drag show last weekend.
Ooh.
I've been to a couple. I went fishing. That's about it.
That's pretty busy.
Yeah. And then on top of just, like,
working.
Yeah, working extra to make up for time off, and yeah, but nothing too crazy to report.
No. Seems all, like, pretty normal stuff.
Yeah.
I forgot to ask, have you had any haunted things happen in your apartment recently? I know we talked about it a long time ago.
I think I told you this at work, but I don't think we've told a podcast about the... So my bed is up against the wall in my room, and on the other side of that wall, there's nothing there. Like, it's... We're on the top floor. The bathroom does not reach that far. And it was kind of, like, early morning, and I was kind of, like, tossing and turning, so I was a little bit awake. And then just, like, 3 loud-as-fuck knocks came from right on that side of the wall. And there's nothing there. And I've never heard that before. Like, it didn't necessarily sound like an animal in the wall. It was like 3 knocks. And I just sat there for a second and I was like, what the fuck?
Do you knock back?
No. No. And that's the only time that that's happened.
Huh. So it hasn't happened since then?
Nope. That was the one and only time I've ever heard that.
That's really weird.
Yeah. Other than that, it's been pretty quiet lately. I feel like a couple things will happen that it's quiet for a while. Oh, you had a creepy thing in your house, right? You just told me the other day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was really weird. I know that there's spirits in this house, but they tend to, we've been here for so long that I think it's just settled, you know, unless we start doing things in the house or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so if we paint or move stuff around, that's when we'll usually notice activity. But there hasn't been anything lately. But it was a couple weeks ago. I forget what I was doing, but I had walked into the kitchen to throw something away. And like right behind my ear, I heard a whisper like, hey, like saying, hey. And I turned around. There's nothing there. And sometimes my son will like to like jump scare me. So I thought maybe it might be him, but I was home by myself. But I didn't know. Sometimes he'll come home and he's a teenager, so he doesn't say hi or anything like that. Just goes up to his room. So I was like, hello. I didn't hear anything. So I was like, okay, that's really weird. I went to continue to go to the trash barrel and I heard like a ding, ding, ding. Like a bell dinging. I was like, what the hell is happening right now? So I started like shaking things around me. And, like, stomping to see if I could recreate the sound. And nothing. Nothing. It sounded like someone, like, clinking a glass with a fork or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. It was really weird. But then nothing's happened since then. Hmm. And it's always in one particular area of the house. And I had just walked through that room that the animals are weird about, that we see... Like, that we hear sounds coming from sometimes. I had put something in the closet in that room, and I was walking out of it to the kitchen, like, to the trash barrel.
What room is it?
It's, like, we don't use our front door, and it's the room you walk into with the front door. So it's, like, we just use it as, like my son's scooters are in there, their shoes in there. Like, it's just kind of, like, I guess a mudroom, but we don't really, it's not really, it's like a front entrance.
Yeah.
But yeah, but this cat and the last cat we had will stare into that room from the outside of it, or they'll be in that room and you can see them like looking at stuff like up in the corners or on the floor. Yeah. And the dog will not walk through that room. Like it's shorter to leave the living room to go through that room to the stairs to go upstairs. She will go around through the dining room, through the kitchen, over to the stairs.
Weird. Like,
she will not walk through it. And if you coax her to walk through it, she seems wicked nervous about it. So there's something going on right there.
That's really interesting.
Huh. Yeah. And that's where I was walking out of when those sounds happened. So... I don't feel anything weird when I'm in that room. Like, we used to have the Peloton bike in that room, and that, I mean, nothing's ever happened. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it's not directly over that creepy room in the basement. So, like, they're on totally opposite ends of the house. So, it's not even like. Hole. Yeah. They're not really related in that way. So, who knows?
That's crazy.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I guess we should snap into it like a Slim Jim. Let's see.
Like a Slim Jim? Did those snap?
Yeah. You might be a little too young, but the Slim Jim.
I was supposed to get that.
Do you know who Macho Man Randy Savage is?
No.
So he was a wrestler. He was like my favorite wrestler back when it was WWF. Or I think it was probably WWE too, but he did the commercial for Slim Jims, and he'd be like, snap into a Slim Jim. Oh, yeah. It was awesome.
Interesting. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Have you had a Slim Jim before?
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you, like, bite into it, like, the skin, like, snaps.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that I just educated you, let's see. So, I'm going to talk about lucid dreaming today. So, as you can tell, I'm obsessed with sleep stuff. I've always had issues sleeping, and I try a bunch of things to regulate my sleeping. Lucid dreaming is something I've tried before, and it kind of works. It's obviously a dream, and Wikipedia calls it a type of dream in which the dreamer becomes aware that they are dreaming. During a lucid dream, the dreamer may gain some amount of control over the dream characters, narrative, or environment. However, this is not actually necessary for a dream to be described as lucid. So it's pretty... Go ahead.
Sorry. This has been a theme of my life recently.
Right.
Because I've been having a ridiculous amount of stress dreams and very, very, very vivid dreams. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's, some of them I do realize I am dreaming. Which is interesting. But, like, it just... They're just very real and very... They just stress me out.
Yeah. Are they, like, nightmarish sort of dreams, or...?
Some of them. Some of them are very dark. Not all of them. Some of them are just really weird and, like, random. Mm-hmm. Like, I had one about, like, the ferrets, and then there was, like, a bunch of ferrets, and they all needed nail trims, and, like, that was enough to stress me out. I don't know.
And they're all just running around flopping over each other.
Yes, yes.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, becoming aware while you're dreaming is, I think, really important, because... At least then, I think if you're aware that it's a dream, it's not stressing you out as much. Mm-hmm. So if that makes any sense.
Yeah, maybe this will help me out.
Yeah. So lucid dreaming has been studied and reported for many years. Prominent figures from ancient and modern times have been fascinated by lucid dreams and have sought better ways to understand their causes and purposes. Many different theories have emerged as a result of scientific research on the subject and have even shown up in pop culture. That just made me think of, you know that song, I still see your shadow in my room. Can't take back the love that I gave you. That one.
No.
Oh my God. It's from Juice WRLD, RIP. I think it's called Lucid Dreams. I bet... It's because I was singing it. I think you would know it if...
That's the problem.
Further developments in psychological research have pointed to ways in which this form of dreaming may be utilized as a form of sleep therapy. The term lucid dream was coined by Dutch author and psychiatrist Frederik van Eeden in his 1913 article, A Study of Dreams. Though descriptions of dreamers becoming aware that they are dreaming predate the article, Van Eeden studied his own dreams between 1898 and December of 1912. So, what was that? That's 4 years. 4 years he did it, recording the ones he deemed more important in his dream diary. 352 of the dreams are categorized as lucid out of the 4 years. So almost a year's worth of dreams.
That's a lot of dreams.
Mm-hmm. Van Eeden created names for seven different types of dreams he experienced based on the data he collected. They are initial dreams, pathological dreams, ordinary dreams, vivid dreams, demonic dreams, general dream sensations, and lucid dreams. Mm-hmm. He said the seventh type, lucid dreaming, is the most interesting and worthy of careful observation and study. Another study by Paul Tholey laid the you ever see a word and you can't even start to pronounce it? I should have looked it up before. Epistemological basis, that sounded better, for the research of lucid dreams, purposing seven different conditions of clarity that a dream must fulfill in order to be defined. So these are what he outlined as to tell if it's a lucid dream or not. So first off, awareness of the dream state, that you're sleeping, you know it's a dream. Awareness of your capacity to make a decision in that dream. Awareness of your memory functions for that dream. Awareness of yourself. Awareness of the dream environment. Awareness of the meaning of the dream. And awareness of concentration and focus. So... Yeah, a couple of those almost sound like the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, pretty much, you're aware that you can control certain things in the dream.
Yeah.
Later in 1992, a study by Dr. Deirdre Barrett examined whether lucid dreams contain four corollaries of lucidity. That would mean the dreamer is aware that they are dreaming, objects disappear after waking, physical laws need not apply in a dream, so like flying and stuff, The dreamer has a clear memory of the waking world. So if you're in your dream and you can still think of stuff that happened in real life, like if you can think clearly, you're having a lucid dream. When you're lucid dreaming, you're in a fake reality. Barrett found that less than a quarter of lucidity accounts exhibited all four of those things. Now, a big scientist that's did like a huge study on lucid dreaming is Dr. Stephen LaBerge, which is my mother's last name. Just shout out to Karen. He studied the prevalence of being able to control the dream scenario among lucid dreams and found that while dream control and dream awareness are correlated, neither requires the other. So you can be aware without controlling your dream, or you can control it but still not be aware that you're in a dream, if that makes sense.
I guess what defines like whether or not you're controlling it?
I think pretty much if you can make a conscious decision, or if you can change something that's happening. Like if someone is running towards you and you can think to yourself, this person is not, like, you can stop them, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't actually know that part of it. Yeah. Like why, I might actually get to it, but it's weird to think about in that, like, how can you control it without being aware that it's a dream?
Yeah, you know? That's what I guess, yeah, because it's like sometimes I'm able to be like, oh, I'm dreaming, but it's like I don't think I necessarily will control it after that. But at the same time, like, I feel like I have made decisions before and like controlled my dreams. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's all a spectrum. So
do you usually, right? I feel like this whole life is just a spectrum.
Yeah.
So it's like everything. Do you feel like when you do make, if you can recall a time that you made decisions in the dream, were you happy with those decisions or not?
Yeah.
So, okay. So it could have been you making those decisions. Because I would think like if you were dreaming and you made a decision in the dream, but then you were pissed off about the outcome, like did you do that consciously or was it just the dream?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's too early in the day for this, I think.
10
a.m. I know. LaBerge found dreams that exhibit one clearly without the capacity for the other. Also, in some dreams where the dreamer is lucid and aware they could exercise control, they choose to simply observe. So, So that's saying that when someone is aware, usually they'll just choose to let it go and see where it goes, sort of thing. Just some ancient history on it. Making the dreamer's ability to be aware that they are dreaming is central to both ancient Indian Hindu practice of yoga nidra and the Tibetan Buddhist practice of dream yoga. These cultivations of such awareness was a common practice among early Buddhists. So I did read somewhere that when you meditate, you can almost put yourself into a lucid dreaming kind of scenario. And I know I used to tease her, but your ex won't be named. She told us once that she would.
She listens to this.
Oh, okay. Hi, I remember something about you. So she would say that she would meditate, but then end up falling asleep. And that, I think that's a good indicator that she's actually doing it the right way. And she could have actually been lucid dreaming from that sleep after the meditation, because that's one of the best ways to put yourself into a lucid dream sort of scenario. So before I used to be like,
I said, I don't even remember her saying that. So good
I only remember because I'd be like, so you laid down for a nap. But she is onto something. I guess that's a good way to relax the body and just give your mind a break for a little bit.
Yeah.
Early references of the phenom were also found in ancient Greek writing. For example, the philosopher Aristotle wrote, often when one is asleep, there is something in consciousness which declares that when the present itself is but a dream. Meanwhile, physician Galen of Pergamon was used lucid dreams as a form of therapy. Let's fast forward a little bit. Oh, no, never mind. So going up to the 17th century, philosopher Sir Thomas Brown was fascinated by dreams that described his own and then described his own ability to lucid dream in his Religio Medici, stating, you know what? That sounds so familiar. I feel like I cited that when we were talking about sleep paralysis. That sounds so familiar.
I have no idea.
Religio Medici, stating, yet in one dream I can compose a whole comedy, behold the action, apprehend the jest, and laugh myself awake at the conceits thereof. Sorry, the cat and the dog just started fighting. I say fighting, but it's really the cat punched the dog in the face. So, have you ever woken up laughing or crying before?
I think so.
I've definitely woken up
crying like a time or two.
Yeah, I definitely have. I've woken up laughing, I think, more than crying, which is probably a good thing. But it's probably also why my husband thinks I'm crazy. Just wake up maniacally laughing.
You do so many weird things in your sleep, though. I would not be surprised.
Yeah, I think he is.
He's probably used to it.
Yes, he is very used to it now. He just told me something I said the other day, and now I can't remember. It'll come to me. I can't remember what he said. So, in 1968, Celia Green analyzed the main characteristics of lucid dreams, reviewing previously published literature on the subject, incorporating new data from participants of her own. She concluded that lucid dreams were a category of experience quite distinct from ordinary dreams, and said they were associated with rapid eye movement sleep, or REM sleep. Green was also the first to link lucid dreams to the phenomenon of false awakenings. So, to think you're awake, but you're actually still dreaming. In 1975, Dr. Keith Hearn had the idea to exploit the nature of rapid eye movement to allow a dreamer to send a message directly from dreams to the waking world. Working with an experienced lucid dreamer named Alan Worsley, he eventually succeeded in recording, via the use of an electroculogram, or EOG, a predefined set of eye movements signaled from within Worsley's lucid dream, which is pretty cool. This occurred at around 8 a.m. the morning of April 12, 1975. Hearn's EOG experiment was formally recognized through the publication in the Journal for the Society of Psychical Research. Lucid dreaming was subsequently researched by asking dreamers to perform predetermined physical responses while experiencing a dream, including eye movement signals. So it could have been something like move your eyes side to side two times and then up and down once and we'll know it's you, sort of thing. So they actually recorded people dreaming, like having dream waves in their brain, but still sending signals to the outside world.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
So in 1980, Professor Stephen LaBerge at Stanford University developed such techniques as part of his doctoral dissertation. In 1985, LaBerge performed a pilot study that showed that time perception while counting during a lucid dream is about the same as during waking life. Lucid dreamers counted out 10 seconds while dreaming, signaling the start and the end of the count with a prearranged eye signal measured with the EOG recording. LaBerge's results were confirmed by German researchers Dr. D. Erlacher and M. Schriedel in 2004. In a further study by LaBerge, four subjects were compared either singing while dreaming or counting while dreaming. LaBerge found that the right hemisphere was more active during singing and the left hemisphere was more active during counting. So they were singing and counting in their dreams so they could just track what part of your brain is working through there.
That's so interesting. It's
yeah.
Crazy that's like possible.
Right.
I don't know.
Just to clarify too, I think like most scientists say it's a pseudoscience and there's no way to prove that you're actually aware while you're dreaming and can control anything. But I think there's enough research on it that there's something to it, you know?
Yeah.
Especially with, if it happens during REM sleep, which is when sleep paralysis happens too, like, that could almost be a kind of a lucid dream, I'm thinking, because you're aware of mm-hmm. what's happening, but you're obviously, your brain is still kind of dreaming too at the same yeah. time. So there has to be something going on with it. Mm-hmm. Neuroscientist Dr. J. Allen Hobson has hypothesized that it might be occurring in the brain while lucid. The first step to lucid dreaming is recognizing one is dreaming. This recognition might occur in the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, which is one of the few areas that is deactivated during REM sleep and where your working memory occurs. Once this area is activated, the recognition of dreaming occurs. The dreamer must be cautious to let the dream continue, but be conscious enough to remember that it is a dream. While maintaining the balance, the amygdala and parahippocampal cortex, might be less intensively activated. To continue the intensity of the dream hallucinations, it's expected that the pons in the parieto-occipital junction stay active. So that's all brain stuff. Okay, so using an EEG measurements, LaBerge and others have shown that lucid dreams begin in the rapid eye movement stage of sleep. He also proposes that there are higher amounts of beta-1 frequency brainwave activity experienced by lucid dreamers. So there is an increased amount of activity in the parietal lobes, making lucid dreaming a conscious process. Excuse me. So then I wanted to get into some alternative theories of what lucid dreaming actually is from other researchers. Other researchers suggest that lucid dreaming is not a state of sleep, but a brief wakefulness or micro awakening. Experiments by Stephen LaBerge use perceptions of the outside world as criterion for wakefulness while studying lucid dreamers, and their sleep state was corroborated with psychological measurements. LaBerge subjects experienced their lucid dream while in a state of REM, which critics felt may mean that the subjects are fully awake. J. Allen Hobson responded that lucid dreaming must be a state of both waking and dreaming, which I'm going to take as sleep paralysis. Philosopher Norman Malcolm has also argued against the possibility of checking the accuracy of dream reports, pointing out that the only criteria of the truth of a statement that someone has a certain dream is essentially his saying so. So there's no way to prove that someone is not just making it up from a scientific standpoint. Like, you can't see what they're seeing and what they're doing. So if you're interested in lucid dreaming, there are some methods to get yourself going, like get yourself starting to lucid dream. Lucid dreaming techniques train your mind to notice your own consciousness. They're also designed to help you regain or maintain consciousness as you enter REM sleep. The first one is wake-initiated lucid dreaming, or the acronym is WILD for that. A wake-initiated lucid dream happens when you directly enter a dream from waking life. It's said WILD helps you stay conscious while your body goes to sleep. You'll need to lay down and relax until you experience a hypnagogic hallucination or hallucination that occurs when you're just about to fall asleep. WILD is simple, but it's difficult to learn. Practicing the other lucid dreaming induction techniques will increase your chances of WILD. Have you ever been falling asleep and all of a sudden your brain thinks you're falling?
Yes.
So I think that's what the beginning of what they're saying is, like, you enter it immediately sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is reality testing. So reality testing, or reality checking, is a form of mental training. It increases metacognition by training your mind to notice your own awareness. your level of metacognition is similar in your waking and dreaming states. So higher when you're awake could lead to higher metacognition when you're awake could lead to a higher metacognition when you're dreaming. So that means it's going to get to it, but checking yourself for reality throughout the day as well as while you're dreaming sort of thing.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it might be related to the brain's prefrontal cortex, which plays a role in both reality testing and lucid dreaming. To enhance your metacognition, you can do reality tests while you're awake. To try reality testing, follow these simple steps several times a day. Ask yourself, am I dreaming right now? Number two, check your environment to confirm whether you're dreaming by touching things or smelling things or whatever. Notice your own consciousness and how you're engaging with your surroundings. You can set an alarm every 2 to 3 hours to remind yourself to do a reality check. Here are common reality checks that people use to lose a dream. Mirrors. Check your reflection in a mirror to see if it looks normal. Solid objects. Push your hand against a wall or a table to see if it goes through. Some people push their fingers into their opposite palm. Hands. Look at your hands. Do they look normal? Time. If you're dreaming, the time on the clock will constantly change, but if you're awake, the time will barely change. Breathing. This popular reality check invokes pinching your nose and seeing if you can breathe. If you can still breathe, you're dreaming.
Interesting.
It's recommended to pick one reality check and do it multiple times a day. This will train your mind to repeat the reality checks while dreaming, which can induce a lucid dream. So the theory is, you know, the more you do it during the day, your brain will get used to it and help you while you're sleeping. This one, which seems like this might be the best method to me. Wake back to bed, or WBTB, involves entering REM sleep while you're still conscious. There are many versions of WBTB, but consider this technique. Set an alarm for 5 hours after your bedtime. Go to sleep as usual. When the alarm goes off, stay up for 30 minutes and enjoy a quiet activity like reading or playing with your phone, and then go back to sleep. When you're back to sleep, you'll be more likely to lucid dream. While you're awake, choose an activity that requires full alertness, like Sudoku or something like that, I guess. So I believe this one because I know when I get up at night to go to the bathroom or whatever, or something wakes me up, when I go back to bed after, my dreams are automatically crazier than when I went to bed. Like, I'm more likely to remember those dreams, and they are very weird.
Interesting.
Yeah. Have you ever experienced that with getting up at night and then going back to bed? Like, in a sober state?
I don't ever get up at night.
You don't?
No.
Huh. Even when you, like, roll over and stuff?
I mean, sometimes I do wake up in the middle of the night, but I don't, like...
Wow.
Like, I don't get up and go to the bathroom or anything. Like, if I do wake up, it is to just roll over and go back to sleep.
That's pretty amazing. What's that like? I don't know. So, yeah. Oh, here we go. I thought it was the end. I was like, I thought there were five. Okay. So, mnemonic induction of your lucid dreams, which is MILD for the anagram. In 1980, LaBerge created a technique of MILD. It was one of the first methods that was used to scientifically research to induce lucid dreams. MILD is based on a behavior called prospective memory, which involves setting an intention to do something later. In MILD, you make the intention to remember that you're dreaming. Here's how to use that technique. One, as you fall asleep, think of a recent dream. Two, identify a dream sign or something that's irregular or strange in the dream. Example is an ability to fly or something like that. Think about returning to the dream. Acknowledge that the dream sign only happens when you dream. Tell yourself, the next time I dream, I want to remember that I'm dreaming, and recite the phrase in your head. You can also practice MILD after waking up in the middle of a dream. This is usually recommended as the dream will be fresher in your mind. Pro tip with that, research suggests that a combination of reality testing, WBTB, and MILD works best. So you can combine all of a WBTB with mild by setting an alarm to wake up in 5 hours. And when you're awake, practice mild, like tell yourself, when I go back to sleep, I want to dream about this and, you know, drill it into mm-hmm. your head. Another important one is keeping a dream journal. This is a popular method for initiating lucid dreaming. When you write down your dreams, you're forced to remember what happens during each dream. It's said to help you recognize dream signs and enhance awareness of your dreams. For best results, log your dreams as soon as you wake up. It's also recommended to read your dream journal often. And that I used to do a lot when I was trying to practice lucid dreaming, like back in the day, because it really does help, like pinpointing if the dreams, if you were thinking that you could control it. And two, if you want to return back to a dream, it's good to read the journals before you go back to bed, like before you go to bed, to see if you can recreate the same thing too. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
How to wake up. Sometimes you might want to wake up from a lucid dream. Lucid dreamers use a few different techniques. One, call out for help. It's said that yelling in your dream tells your brain to wake up. Or if you manage to speak out loud, you might wake yourself up. Blink.
So that oh. I've done.
Oh, really?
And that when a lot of times when I was younger, if I was having a nightmare, I could realize I was having a dream and I would just scream my head off in the dream and it usually would wake me up.
Oh, look at that. Jeez. Intense, but it works.
Yes, exactly. Terrifying, but.
You could also try blinking. Repeated blinking might help you get your mind ready to wake up. Or you can also fall asleep in your dream. If you're aware that you're dreaming, go to sleep in your dream so you can wake up in real life, which is interesting. Try to read a sign or a book in your dream. That could activate parts of your brain that aren't used in REM. So that makes sense too, like you're waking up your brain in that way. Mm-hmm. So some things you could use lucid dreaming for, obviously treating nightmares. It has been suggested that those who suffer from nightmares could benefit from the ability to be aware they are indeed dreaming. A pilot study performed in 2006 shows that lucid dreaming therapy treatment was successful in reducing nightmare frequency. This treatment consisted of exposure to the idea, mastery of the technique, and lucid exercises. It's not clear what aspects of the treatment were responsible for success of overcoming nightmares, though the treatment as a whole is said to be successful. Australian psychologist Dr. Milan Kolick has explored the application of principles from narrative therapy to clients' lucid dreams to reduce the impact of not only nightmares during sleep, but also depression, self-mutilation, and other problems in their waking life. Kolick found that therapeutic conversations could reduce the distressing content of the dreams, while understandings about life and even characters from lucid dreams could be applied to their lives with marked therapeutic benefits. It's almost like sleep therapy, like therapy in your sleep. Psychotherapists have applied lucid dreaming as part of therapy. Studies have shown that by inducing a lucid dream, recurrent nightmares can be alleviated. It's unclear whether this alleviation is due to lucidity or the ability to alter the dream itself. Another 2006 study performed by Victor Spormaker and Van Den Bout evaluated the validity of lucid dreaming in chronic nightmare sufferers. LDT is composed of exposure, mastery, and lucidity exercises. Results of lucid dreaming treatment revealed that the nightmare frequency of the treatment groups had decreased. In another study, Spormaker and Meyer investigated lucid dreaming treatment for nightmares by testing 8 subjects who received a 1-hour individual session, which consisted of lucid dreaming exercises. The result of the study revealed that the nightmare frequency had decreased and the sleep had slightly increased. You could also use lucid dreaming as a creativity source. In her book, The Committee of Sleep by Deirdre Barrett, describes how some experienced lucid dreamers have learned to remember specific practical goals, such as artists looking for inspiration, seeking a show of their own once they become lucid, or computer programmers looking for a screen with their desired code. However, most of the dreamers have many experiences of failing to recall waking objects before gaining this level of control. There are some risks involved with it. Though lucid dreaming can be beneficial to a number of aspects of life, some risks have been suggested. Those who had never had a lucid dream may not understand what's happening when they experience for the first time. This could cause those individuals to feel a variety of emotions as they're going through completely new psychological experience. Feelings of stress, worry, or confusion could arise. On the other hand, the feeling of empowerment could also come up as they realize that they are now in control of their dreams. Individuals who experience lucid dreams regularly could begin to feel isolated from others due to the fact that they have different experiences when it comes to dreaming. So someone struggling with certain mental illnesses could find it hard to be able to tell the difference between reality and the actual dream. A very small percentage of people may experience sleep paralysis, which is something that can sometimes be confused with lucid dreaming. Although from the outside, both of these seem quite similar, there are a few distinct differences that can help differentiate them. A person usually experiences sleep paralysis when they partially wake up in REM atonia, which is a state where the person's partially paralyzed and cannot move their limbs. When in sleep paralysis, people may experience hallucinations. Although hallucinations cannot cause physical damage, they still might be frightening. Can confirm that they are frightening. Can confirm. There are three common types of hallucinations, and this is a throwback to sleep paralysis episode. One is an intruder in the same room. Two, a crushing feeling on one's chest or back. And three, a feeling of flying or levitating. The flying or levitating I've actually never experienced during sleep paralysis. The other two I have at the same time.
Yes, no thank you.
Yeah. No, thank you. About 7%, 7.6% of the general population have experienced sleep paralysis at least once. So that's weird. I would have thought it was a bigger number.
Yeah.
Only 7%, huh?
Yeah, I would think it would be a bigger number too.
Yeah. Exiting sleep paralysis to a waking state can be achieved by intently focusing on a part of the body, such as a finger, wiggling it, and continue the action of moving, then to the hand, the arm, and so on until the person is fully awake. Long-term risks with lucid dreaming have not been extensively studied, although many people have been lucid dreaming for many years without any adverse effects. So, to conclude this, I went on the Lucid Dream Reddit page to find some stories of people dreaming. Excuse me, I'm going to take a drink. So there were a few. I only did three. This one, I did not copy the person's name, so I can't give them credit. But one of them, they documented at December 4th, 7:53 a.m., night of a solar eclipse. It began with a normal dream until I unexpectedly discovered I was dreaming. I started taking off, flying above the earth, and decided to meditate. Soon I was first of many beautiful patterned wormholes, one of which looked at like it had alternate realities spinning all around me. I let go of control but held on to the lucidity, and there were sudden spouts of major changes that I could not capture. But the more I meditated and let go, the deeper the wormhole seemed to go. And I may have seen a planet through one. This sounds like scary. Like I wouldn't want to be in this dream. And eventually I popped through a wormhole and saw a giant blood cell before me. This felt significant. Sorry. Then I kept going back in the wormholes, still letting go and reaching forward. Saw more fractals, more wormholes, eventually came to some white-looking destination, similar to the Lucy movie ending. Then I was pulled back as I thought of it. Have you seen that movie, Lucy? No. Scarlett Johansson. It's weird. It's not weird, but I don't remember a lot about it because I remember thinking like, oh, I wish I could go back and listen to that again. Like, you really have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. I was pulled back as I thought of it. I could not hold on to it. I went back through all the separate wormholes, saw something spinning inside one of the wormholes, and that wormhole looked like my phone screen. They eventually were back in bed and my wife had woken up and said something to me that she never does. I told her I was still dreaming. I told her she was Dream Caitlin. She was so sad and stated something about not wanting to be Dream Caitlin. I told her I loved real Caitlin and Dream Caitlin. I thought maybe I was in one of those alternate realities. Then I woke up to this reality. That's the end of this one.
Hmm.
Yep. This one is from user Whimsical as FCK. My girlfriend and I stepped out of our house hand in hand on the way to do something together. We look at the open patches of sky, the clouds and the plains, vapor and chemtrails lining the sky, and notice a shining dot of light, about the size of a few planes clumped together, rocketing through the atmosphere at an angle much like a comet about to strike the Earth. I turn to my girlfriend and say, "I think this is the end. I need you to know that I love you." We watch the object plummet down and crash into the horizon, causing a massive atomic-like mushroom explosion that blocks out the daylight, and we watch the shockwaves travel across the landscape. We grab each other. I feel the heat, even though the shockwaves seem miles away. It approaches in a quick second. I know we're about to experience tremendous pain, so I close my eyes and brace. The wave hits, and a moment I feel all of my flesh rip away from me. Sorry. This is intense. The pain is instantly gone. I am now in the same exact spot, but instead of a geometric plane or plateau, looking at what is now the night sky and a grid beneath me, with the knowing that I just died, my girlfriend's presence still lingers next to me, but I can't see her. In the night sky above the geometric horizon, a giant scrolling yellowish text goes across the horizon that reads, "Game over, press to begin day over again." Game over, press to begin day over again. And all these lines of credit start scrolling up under the main unflinching text, like Star Wars. Like the end of a movie scrolling upwards. I stand there for a moment contemplating what I'm seeing. The game over, the option to start over again. I look at the ground where I am. I wonder silently to myself, how am I in this space? Where am I? I look at the yellow words again, trying to make sense of it. Then instantly I'm awake in my bed. So yeah, that's pretty intense.
Yeah, that one was real intense.
You die in a horrible explosion and then you look up and it's like, game over, start again. Like you just went to bed after playing Pac-Man or something.
Right.
All right, the last one is from spiritual_gangster. I woke up in the same position I laid down. At first, I don't think I fell asleep, but then I felt a presence behind me, so I thought it was my dad. I went to get up and talk to him, but it was a lady acting like my dad. I started to say, "Hey, Dad, what are you doing?" Then she said something weird, and then I said, "You're not my dad." She started to panic. It was so scary that I did a reality check. That's how I always know I'm dreaming. But she knew I was going to do so, so she stopped me by forcing my hand to go down. Then I forced her off and looked at my hands. They usually look alien, like with human skin, but now it was double vision. I started to count. It was 6. I said to myself, "Count again." It was 6, so I knew it was a dream. I think he's talking about the fingers. I was lucid. Then the lady knew that, and she became multiple and doubled. So I was backing up, purposely fell backwards from my window. When I was falling down, it felt like a roller coaster ride when your heart sinks. So I don't know how to explain that, but I loved it. After that, I was flying in my neighborhood. After I did some dumb shit, I came back to my room. Went to the bathroom to look at myself. I love doing that because I look like a Snapchat filter that makes you look like a man, but then I have a distorted face. But now I was normal, then I doubled in the mirror. My reflection was doubled. Looked to the side, no one was there. So while looking in the mirror, my double reflection, between the space of our reflection, it formed an image I tried to focus on and see what it was. Then it was reptilian looking to me. I panicked and tried to wake up, went back to my room, and was, and it was set at the same scene with the lady and me, like a game show, or I was reliving a daydream again. I panicked, woke up. After I woke up, I had sleep paralysis. I had the same feeling when I started the dream that someone was standing behind me. I still panicked, but managed to go back to sleep. And that was from their dream journal notes, June 18th, 2022.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, it's, I like reading, I read this thread for a really long time because I, so crazy what people actually dream about.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's all different. I feel like everybody has different dream experiences.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It is really crazy that your mind kind of reviews your life as you're sleeping, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating to me. Well, yeah. That's all I have.
Nice. That was very informative.
I know. Maybe you can try some of that stuff so you can have some better dreams.
Seriously, I need to.
Yep. We should start doing reality checks at work so everyone thinks that we're weirder than we already are.
Just, we can pick a specific time. Well, they're going to hear it because they listen to this.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Never mind, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, not going to do it. Oh, man. So what do you have going on for today?
All right. This is going to be a long episode, but that's okay because it'll make up for a month and a half of nothing.
Right. Oh, yeah. We're almost already at an hour.
Yeah.
Woo.
So I have, of course, another disappearance.
Love it.
It's just fascinating. And this is one that's always stuck in my head and I've always remembered. So I have another disappearance. And this one's... Excuse me, it's 10:45 a.m. and I'm tired. Okay. This is a fairly lengthy one. I feel like all mine are kind of lengthy, but this one is quite a few pages.
Awesome. Okay.
So, I watched the Disappeared episode on this because I of really course. Like that show. Yep. And I think they do a good job. And they give, like, pretty much all the information I could ever find. Like, I try after to find anything, like, a little different, and usually I can't find anything different, so...
Hmm.
So, December 2015, in Caroline County, Virginia, Caitlin Akins, who is 19 at the time, is making a quick trip back to her hometown just for a couple days to see her sister Gabby's new baby, whose name is Landon. Her sister Gabby said at the time, Landon was only 2 weeks old, and Caitlin seemed very excited to be coming to meet her new baby nephew. Mm-hmm. Despite not living close to each other anymore, Caitlin and Gabby had always been close and remained that way, even after Caitlin moved away. So Caitlin moved away to Arizona with her fiance Amber Rios, who was 21 at the time. Amber and Caitlin knew each other for years. Amber and her family grew up very close to where Caitlin did. Amber and her family moved to Arizona when they were around 11 or 12 years old, but her and Caitlin stayed in contact with each other. Caitlin's mom said that their friendship eventually turned into romance. So when Caitlin turned 18, she moved out to Arizona to be with Amber.
Just Caitlin's to stop you, I missed where she moved from. Like, where's the sister live?
Caroline County, Virginia.
Virginia. Okay.
Yep, so Virginia to Arizona.
Gotcha.
So Caitlin's family was supportive of that decision to move out there, and they just wanted her to be happy. So even though Caitlin didn't live in Virginia anymore, she stayed in touch with her family. Her sister says that she talked to her all day, every day, even after she moved. Caitlin was also known to talk to her mom or aunt a couple times a day, usually on the phone. So Caitlin did amazing in school. She always excelled, never had to study. She even asked her mom one day if she could graduate early. Her mom said yeah, but asked why she wanted to do that. Caitlin's answer was that she already had enough credits to graduate, and she just wanted to get it over with.
Right.
Which, like, heard okay.
That. Right.
So she graduated at just 16, doing her 11th and 12th year of high school at 15.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Good, like, for her.
What? Yeah. Okay. Yes. Seriously. I could not do that.
But. No.
So, 3 years after graduating high school, Caitlin decides to go to cosmetology school out in Arizona. Her family said that seemed like a really fitting career for her. She always wanted to help people and make them feel and look better. She always liked doing hair and helping her family out with their hair. She would do makeup and nails, too. So on Thursday, 2 days before Caitlin is supposed to fly back home to Arizona, she goes to hang out with a couple of friends that were friends of hers from high school. Mm-hmm. They end up partying pretty late, and Caitlin was invited to spend the night there with them, which she did, and the friends drove her back to her mom's the next morning. Caitlin was supposed to be starting her cosmetology school the following Monday, so only a couple days from now. Caitlin notes that she wants to bring her diploma back to Arizona with her so she can complete everything she needs to for cosmetology school.
Mm-hmm.
So Saturday morning, Caitlin's due to fly back to Arizona. Her mom isn't able to give her a ride herself because she works on the weekends, so she asks her ex-husband, James Branton, to give Caitlin a ride to the airport. Caitlin, at this time, was excited to see James because she hadn't seen him in a long time.
Is that so, Caitlin's father, or...?
So, James is Caitlin's former stepdad.
Okay. Gotcha.
Caitlin's biological dad was out of the picture by the time she was a toddler.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Her mom and James met when Caitlin was 7, and they spent 6 years together. James was Caitlin's only father figure. Caitlin's mom, Lisa, said that James was great at first with Gabby and Caitlin, but towards the end was a little more distant and he didn't come around as much. So Saturday morning at 9 a.m., Lisa, Caitlin's mom, drops Caitlin off in Spotsylvania County, which is nearby where they live, mm-hmm. at James' house. Caitlin and James didn't have a lot of time to visit before they would have to head out to Reagan Airport, which was 60 miles or 90 kilometers north from where they were at James' house.
Okay.
The two decided Caitlin would go to the airport 4 hours early because James claimed that he had to work later that day and would need to be all the way back near his home for work.
Okay.
Caitlin's mom said she thinks Caitlin's flight was around 5:40 p.m. So James was supposed to drop her off at the airport around 1 p.m. so he could get back to work by 3.
Okay.
So, Caitlin's mom gets a text from James around 1:52 p.m. saying that he had dropped Caitlin off. The text was just like, I dropped her off. It wasn't anything specific.
Okay. At almost 2? So,
yes.
Okay.
So then a minute or two later, Lisa gets a text from Caitlin saying she's at the airport, but her phone is dying, so she'll talk to her later.
Okay.
So now, around the same time, Amber, Caitlin's fiancé, gets a very different text from Caitlin. So Amber ends up reaching out to Lisa and says that Caitlin said that she wasn't going to get on the plane. Hmm. Lisa was obviously very confused because Caitlin hadn't said anything about not going on the flight. She said she was at the airport.
Right.
Amber said that something was going on and that Caitlin was waiting for a new flight. Lisa then told Amber there was no new flight, only that one she's supposed to be on.
What?
Yeah, exactly. And it gets worse. It's crazy. It's so weird. It's so confusing and so many different things happening all at once. So, Lisa, while at work, began reaching out to family members saying something was up with Caitlin and that something wasn't right. Caitlin's aunt sent her a few messages saying they were worried about her and for her to please contact them, but they never heard back from her.
Hmm.
So now, it was a while later when Lisa got off work, she sent James a text asking him where he had dropped Caitlin off. He said Springfield Mall. So this kind of comes back to where when he just was like, I dropped her off. He didn't specify where.
At the mall?
Yes.
Okay.
So now he's telling Caitlin's mom that he dropped her off at Springfield Mall.
Is that close to the airport?
Not super close.
Oh, okay.
So, it didn't seem like in his first text to Lisa. Yeah, so I kind of say it in the next sentence that he didn't specify where he dropped Caitlin off. He just said he dropped her off. When Lisa asked why there, James said because that's where she wanted to be dropped off. James said that instead of sitting at the airport for 4 hours, Caitlin wanted to go to the mall that was nearby, but not like... It's not like the next building was the airport, you know?
Right, she couldn't walk there, right?
Right, and then she would take the metro over to the airport.
Okay.
So well, maybe. That's just another... Right, which is okay, but also, why would Caitlin have texted her mom that she was at the airport if she was at the mall?
Yeah. Yep, that's right.
So, Caitlin's aunt said that didn't make any sense. None of them had ever heard of that mall. Caitlin had never rode the metro. She most likely wouldn't have done that, on her own.
They had never heard of that mall?
Yeah, it wasn't close. I mean, again, that's I think I said it was 60 miles away. So, yes. So it wasn't close.
Gotcha.
Like, the mall did exist. Okay. It was a mall, but, like, it's not like it was one she had gone to all the time and, like...
Right. Gotcha.
And, like, that was too... I would never by myself be like, yeah, drop me off at this random mall near this random airport. I'll take the metro over to the airport.
Right.
And, no.
I did forget for a second that she was, like, an hour away from where she knew everyone, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So, Lisa continued to leave messages on Caitlin's phone, but heard nothing back until the one last text message at about 7:15 p.m. that said, I'm with a friend, I need time alone. Caitlin's phone then went back to where it wasn't receiving calls again.
Hmm.
Lisa said these texts didn't seem like they were coming from her daughter. They just weren't formatted in the way Caitlin typically texted.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin was someone who would text all in one big message versus a few multiple texts, with each containing, like, a sentence or something like that.
Yeah.
So at this point, Caitlin had for sure missed her flight. That was supposed to be around 5:40 p.m. In fact, her mom and aunt contacted the airline to confirm that Caitlin did not get on the flight. And she did not.
Okay.
Amber reaches out to Lisa again because she just got another text from Caitlin that said, I can't come back, I cheated on you.
Oh.
This text, however, came through Facebook, not text message.
Oh.
So, according to Lisa, that message also didn't seem like it was from Caitlin. So, this text obviously made Lisa question if something had happened between Amber and Caitlin, if they had gotten into a fight or something, but Amber said no, that they hadn't gotten mm-hmm. into a fight. Her whole family claims nothing seemed to be wrong at all with Caitlin before she left. She was not known to be a runaway either. So, Caitlin's family continued to just go back and forth with how and why Caitlin's plan had changed. They thought she maybe had a friend pick her up at the airport or something. Caitlin's ex-stepdad still sticks to that he dropped her off at the mall and gave her $20 to take the metro to the airport after she was done at the mall. He said she didn't mention anything about a friend picking her up or even meeting up with a friend at any point. So, through the next day, no one heard from Caitlin. Her family attempted to reach police, the airport, and even the metro with nothing really coming of it. The police said they couldn't do anything yet. And, of course, said the whole, if she wants to be missing, she can be, because she's an adult.
Oh, God. I hate that.
I know. So, on Monday, 2 days after Caitlin disappeared, Lisa contacts the police again and reports Caitlin missing. In the middle of Caitlin's mom filling out the missing persons report, she's pulled aside and is told that Caitlin's luggage was found on the side of the road in a ditch.
Uh-oh.
The luggage was found on River Road, which is more than 50 miles or 80 kilometers from the Reagan Airport where Caitlin was supposed to be 2 days ago.
Wow.
So that 50 miles where it was found is, like, back where Caitlin's home was.
Yeah.
So Caitlin's luggage was found pretty much along the route they had taken to get to the mall, just way back down near her family's home.
Hmm. That's weird.
Yeah. So, Caitlin's suitcase had a broken wheel on it, like it had been thrown out of a car. It had her wallet in it, all her debit cards that she would need to buy anything. Her cash, phone charger, ID, toothbrush were also still in the suitcase. Her phone, clothes, and high school diploma were the only things not in the suitcase.
Hmm. That's weird.
Yeah.
High school diploma.
Yeah. Detective. Hold on, I'm thirsty. Detective Rob Marshall is the one who took on Caitlin's case. He interviewed all of Caitlin's close relatives, including James, her ex-stepdad, who was the last known person to see Caitlin. James told Detective Marshall the same story he has been sticking to this whole time. He dropped her off at the Springfield Mall around 1 p.m. at the JCPenney area of the mall. He said the same thing about having to drop her off early because he had to work at 3:45 p.m. Lisa said that James had been in Caitlin's life long enough to know not to drop her off there, and she wouldn't know how to use the metro.
Mm-hmm.
But also, men are stupid, so.
Right.
Detective Marshall decides to pull surveillance footage from the mall, metro station, and airport. Right in the middle of the detective pulling this information, he's informed that a young girl's body, about 20 years old, has been found not far from the ditch that Caitlin's belongings had been found. So this body mm-hmm. was found, this is just 2 days after she went missing.
Mm-hmm.
He stated that this was very odd because stuff like this didn't really happen in Spotsylvania County.
Mm-hmm.
The description of the girl found was pretty close to Caitlin's. However, it was determined it wasn't Caitlin, but another young girl, Heather Sison, from the same county. It was determined to be a homicide. Lisa even stated that she believed she had met Heather before because they were all from the same area.
Hmm.
This made Caitlin's family worry that the two were connected, and
right.
Even the police said it wasn't common for a murder and a disappearance to happen within 48 hours of each other.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So they tried to determine if the girls knew each other, if there was any type of connection whatsoever, and they didn't find any. 5 days after Caitlin disappeared, they began searching the river near where the suitcase had been found. They did a helicopter search in a 30-mile radius, still nothing. Mom. So Detective Marshall, after a week, decides to contact the friends that Caitlin had spent the night with while she was home visiting her family. They were drinking and playing games and having fun, and that ended up leading the friends all being intimate with each other. So,
ooh, spicy.
Right. Right. So they're when Caitlin texted Amber saying, "I cheated on you," like, that seems
legit.
Yes, exactly. So, like, okay, that, you know, even in those moments of the weird text messages, like, that seemed like her, and that was information only she would have known, she and the friends, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone involved seemed to regret that decision they had made by the next day. So Caitlin seemed pretty upset by it. The friends were very straightforward with the police and didn't think they were involved in any way in her disappearance. So now this makes the text Caitlin sent to her fiance, "I can't come back, I cheated on you," seem like Caitlin.
Mm-hmm.
The police looked further into Caitlin's social media and found another relevant conversation she was having in the morning of the day she disappeared. Caitlin was saying, "I don't want to be here, and I don't want to be there." Detective Marshall took that to mean she didn't want to be in Virginia or in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that message, the whole idea that she could have gone missing on purpose to maybe get out of her engagement seemed more believable.
Yeah.
Police tried to stake out certain places to see if they could find her hiding away somewhere at a friend's house or something, but after 2 weeks, still nothing. Caitlin's cell phone records now make it to Detective Marshall. So again, about 2 p.m., Caitlin texted her mom that she was at the airport and that her phone was dying, so she wouldn't be able to text her for a little bit. When her phone sent that message, she was not in Springfield, where the mall is, or at the Reagan Airport. Her phone was pinging from the Fredericksburg area in Spotsylvania County, 50 miles from the airport, but only 5 miles from where her luggage was found.
Oh, no.
So her phone pinged from the area where she lived and originally was supposed to have left from.
Oh, my God. Did you ever... Have they still not looked at the video footage from any of these places yet? I know you said he started looking at them.
I think I'll get to it.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. So James had said he dropped Caitlin off at the JCPenney area of the mall, and that's mm-hmm. the last time he saw her. There happened to be two cameras in the parking lot of JCPenney, and neither of them, around 1 p.m., showed James dropping Caitlin off.
Oh, no.
The metro and airport had no confirmation of the surveillance cameras that Caitlin had been there either.
James.
So she was not seen on the cameras at any of these places. James' car was not seen dropping her off. So James had been very cooperative with the police from the beginning. He always answered their calls, answered their questions, provided them with pictures of his car so they could look for it in the video. With all the new findings now, it was making James' story seem like that's not what happened. Mm-hmm. So they called James and asked him to come in to take a polygraph so they could rule him out. He agreed to do so. So Christmas was between James agreeing to do this and then him all of a sudden saying his attorney told him not to and that he wasn't going to come in for a polygraph.
Mm-hmm.
Detective Marshall tried to explain to James that since he was the last person to see Caitlin, they just had to rule him out so they could move past him. They weren't looking at him as a suspect. James then hung up on Marshall.
I mean, which is within his right to. Like, yeah, he has a right to have an attorney if he's being questioned at all, you know?
Yes.
So
yes,
that's, I don't consider that as, like, showing he's guilty, but the fact that he must have sensed that some heat was coming to him, you know?
Right. I don't know. To me, you'd just think you'd want to do anything you can to help.
Right. I'm always nervous that I'm going to say the wrong thing or the way I word something could be taken the wrong way. So I think I would want to help, but I also think I would want some sort of if it's for something like this, not if it's like, you know, if it's one of those things where I was the last person to see someone that has disappeared and they're thinking that there's foul play involved, like, I probably want to at least take some advice from an attorney about what mm-hmm. questions I should be answering and what I should be doing, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But with that said, he's looking pretty sus right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Lisa then was asking James why he wouldn't just do the polygraph test, and James responded with, I've already said what I have to say to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, next up, Detective Marshall gets a warrant to search James' home, including the swamp behind his house. This was happening about a month after Caitlin went missing. This is the last known location of Caitlin because her mom dropped her off there before James was supposed to bring her to the airport. Mm-hmm. Nothing was found in the house.
Nothing?
Nope. Detective Marshall is now wondering if James is covering for Caitlin in some type of way. His story just doesn't make sense. When James texted Lisa that he had dropped Caitlin off, that message pinged from the Partlow Tower, the town James lived in at the time. So when James sent that text, he was home.
And how far is that from the ping on her phone? Do you know?
Not far. So his phone pinged at his house. Her phone pretty much pinged like she was around her house.
Oh. Huh. That's so weird.
So, yeah. So both phones sent text messages around 1 p.m. Caitlin's, which pings from Fredericksburg, which is where Caitlin's family's lived, and James pinged from Partlow, where he lived. So neither of them were where they said they were,
yeah.
Regardless.
But they weren't together.
Right, because they would have pinged off the same tower.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. So, also, James had always said he was going to work around 3. That's originally why he was dropping Caitlin off so early, but Detective Marshall checked with James' employer, and he, in fact, did not go to work that day. Oh. He called out.
Oh, no.
So, another oddity. Friends and family were calling and texting Caitlin like crazy trying to reach her. James never tried calling her. He was the only one that did not try to call Caitlin.
Mm-hmm. Wonder why.
Lisa approached James after she found out he never went to work that day, and she asked him why he lied. She said he had just sat there and really didn't say anything. He hasn't been talking at all. Detective Marshall says he's left the door open for James to come talk to him at any time. He thinks James most likely helped Caitlin get away, and that's why he's staying quiet. At the same time, why not just have her reach out and say she's all right? There's no way she'd go this long without talking to her family.
So the detectives don't think that he did something to her. They think that he's just helping her, like hiding.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. So Gabby, Caitlin's sister, thinks Caitlin met somebody online who she had been talking to for a while, and that they weren't a good person, and that they may have done something to Caitlin. Using her primary accounts, there was no record of Caitlin communicating with strangers. Detectives did learn that Caitlin was known to use an encrypted messaging app, which police would not have access to.
Hmm.
They're also still looking for an answer to the Heather Sassone case, and Marshall says he'll never give up trying to solve that case. So, that's pretty much it.
Ooh.
They don't know who murdered that girl. They don't know who murdered Heather. They don't know where Caitlin is.
Weird.
But I know. So I do just, real quick, I have, if you have any information about Caitlin Akins, you can contact the Spotsylvania County Sheriff's Office at 540-582-7115. But yeah, that's, I don't know. When I read that about the phones not pinging where they were supposed to, I don't think she was ever up there.
No. No, I don't think so either.
Go ahead.
I don't know if I think that he's covering for her. Because you think if you were getting that much heat from the police, you would just say, you know what? I don't know where she is, but I helped her get over here. You know? Sort of yeah. thing. Like, you think you would just say that, but I don't know. So I was thinking to myself, say he took her cell phone. Like, what if in the car or something she felt bad about what happened at that party, told him about it, and then he is the one that sent the text from her phone to her wife or girlfriend, you know? That's almost kind of what I was thinking. Like, what if he's just had her cell phone and then destroyed it somewhere?
Well, the only thing with that is they sent text messages at, like, the same time, but from two different towers.
Oh, yeah.
Because the I dropped her off and the I'm at the airport came pretty much within minutes of each other.
Okay. I don't know. I don't think he's as innocent as... Because it's weird that the sister even thinks that she just ran away, you know?
Yeah, the sister thinks maybe that she met up with somebody she was talking to online.
But to give up all of her schooling and dreams and where she moved out to be with someone?
I don't know. There's so many aspects to this one that's just like, I don't necessarily think, like, I think James knows something. I honestly would lead to that he helped her get away. I don't think, I mean, there is absolutely no evidence that anything, like, bad happened to her. So I don't think.
Yeah, but her money and her ID and everything are in that suitcase. And then to not even tell her mother that that's what you did, like, that's crazy, you know?
Yeah, I know. Well, that, exactly. Like, why, especially at this point, why would you not just be like, exactly, I don't know where she is, but.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe he, all I can think is, like, he, I don't know, dropped her, he drove her back up a little bit to where she was from, and maybe she got in the car with somebody else, who that is, who knows, or.
Yeah.
And then, like, who knows, if it was a bad person, maybe that's why her car, like, I, it makes it seem like her luggage was thrown out the window.
Right. Yeah, maybe but if yeah, someone.
She'd have her wallet. But, like, okay, I feel like to take your clothes out of there, too, like, clothes are so messy. My suitcase looks like a disaster to, like, just grab all the clothes and then, like, your diploma and cell phone. Like, I don't know. That's just so random.
Yeah, that is random. I thought when you said clothes, you had just meant, like, they didn't find the clothes she was known to be wearing. So it was all the clothes from her luggage?
I think so.
Wow. Huh. That's weird.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I know.
I have to look that up. How, and what year was this?
2015.
Okay. So not a crazy amount of time.
Mm-mm.
It's still a while, though.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I like that one.
Yeah. It's a very interesting one. And again, I feel like you get a little bit more information each as you go, and you're like, oh, shit.
Right.
But.
I'll have to look her up, too, in case she traveled north.
Right.
Okay. You never know. You never know. All right, so I guess that's it for today.
Long episode. That was good, though.
Yeah, we needed a good one.
Yeah.
You're grooming some doggies today, right?
Yep. I'm gonna go do that right now.
Well, have fun.
You too. Are you doing anything exciting today?
We're just heading up to camp. We're going to be camping for the weekend.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's going to be a nice weekend.
Yeah. And we got, like, some new patio furniture stuff that we need to put together. So tomorrow is supposed to be rainy, so we'll probably do that tomorrow.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. If you want to follow us on Instagram, you can follow us at WhatHaveYouDonePod. And as always, if you want to send us some stories, you can also email us at whathaveyoudonepod@gmail.com.
Send us your stories.
Send them. And if you don't have anything else, I guess we can say see you later.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Bye.